The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Running into the studio, baseball, football, maybe basketball, everything here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Whoo! Breathe. Welcome in. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I feel like that was the old school version of On the Line right there. My goodness, sprinting into the studio, both of us did. Not even at 2 o'clock, at like 2:01:20. And happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well. We do have a really good reason of why we are running into the studio. Just got done with a fantastic interview that we will play here in just a few moments. But whew, happy Wednesday, goodness, sir. Hopefully everything is good in your world. You got to experience a little bit of the, not the cardio stress, but the, oh crap, there's the liner, there's our intro, and we hear it from the other studio. So yes. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. I had just had to like turn into prime Jarquez Hunter, Tank Bigsby, because the two chairs were, I had to juke one way, juke the other way.
Oh, so basically you were Tank Bigsby. You had contact before you even crossed the line
and
of scrimmage.
Then, yeah, spin through the door, cut the corner, and then just break away around you. We have to jump around each other and get here into the control room producer chair. And so we are here. We are ready to go here on this Wednesday afternoon. I don't even have my computer, so I'm gonna have to go get that at some point, but it doesn't matter. We can still just talk until then.
Yes. Felt like, was that prime Kerryon Johnson against Arkansas State with Sean White falling, flipping it to him, Kerryon going on the near sideline, spinning back, running all the way
behind
the line of scrimmage, and then diving into the end zone. One of the best broken plays that you will ever see. That was Tripp Upton running into the studio here this afternoon. But we greatly appreciate your time. Again, he is Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin here on this Wednesday afternoon. And a lot to dive into here to get the show started. Down goes Texas. We're going to dive into the College World Series. And I know we just ran in here, so I can't even really get mad at you. But what is this that we have going? We have Golf Central on the TV right now.
This would be courtesy of our good friend and co-worker, Mr. Ben Taylor.
Oh, man.
So I will find that.
We'll find our baseball, what we need to have. But we're diving into a lot of what happened last night as Georgia survives an absolute pitcher's duel, something that you wouldn't think you would ever really say about this Georgia baseball team until you got to Omaha and you've realized the Georgia bats have kind of gone silent, but it's the pitching staff that has pulled a whole lot of the slack to force this team into a winner-take-all type, or I guess not a winner-take-all, but an elimination game that the Georgia Bulldogs must win here tonight, taking on Oklahoma yet again, a rematch on that side of things. We'll dive into that. We'll dive into what the bracket looks like as a whole right now. Talk a little bit about this West Virginia-North Carolina game as both West Virginia and Georgia are in must-win situations. My goodness, that's just so beautiful.
The
drone footage of Charles Schwab Field. Oh, it's just,
it's awesome.
It's so beautiful. And then at 2:30, we usually make our way to Athens, Georgia, but instead we make our way to Omaha, Nebraska, as Olivia Sayer of Dogs 24/7 joins us on the phone lines. We talk a lot about it with Jordan, and he plugs all of her baseball content. Had a fantastic interview with her literally just a few moments ago, which is the reason that we are sprinting into the studio here this afternoon. But greatly appreciate her for taking a little bit of time to join us. And so we'll be able to have that interview for you coming up at 2:30. And then in hour number two, going to have a whole lot of fun in terms of some SEC win total projections combined with the schedule and how, although Auburn's looked at to have a really, really easy schedule, this is the easiest one they've had in years. When you combine the win totals for each team, combine that and add that up with the overall schedule, it's nowhere near in terms of easy in the SEC, but some teams have it a little bit easier than others do, and so we will be able to dive all into that, talking about all 16 teams, and then the early test inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, because there is a lot of love for the Florida Gators. Yet there's not really any love for the Auburn Tigers, yet they are on the same trajectory, and we will talk about how important that game is under the lights inside Jordan-Hare Stadium.
But if you want to be a part of the show, up until obviously our segment with Olivia Sayer, phone lines will be open the entire second hour and up to that in the first hour. So go ahead, give us a call, 334-321-1390. That's 334-321-1390 for the phone line. The text box, again, different than, you know, if you've been under a rock recently, we have changed that. 334-784-1685. 334-784-1OTL. I did that without any notes,
say,
right?
That's a company man right there.
That is, yes, yes. So make sure, please, give your thoughts, whether it be about baseball, college football. If you got any college basketball news, Braves baseball, look, we'll talk about almost anything in terms of here on the line. So we are going to get right into it. But as we watch the TV with Carolina and their Carolina Blues and West Virginia and the Whites, Omaha in the past yesterday was pretty phenomenal.
It was. North Carolina with a 5-1 lead over West Virginia. Again, the teams in the winner's bracket are the road teams here this afternoon and this evening. If they make it to tomorrow, they will then be the home team in the winner take all. Two spot for North Carolina in the first. West Virginia responded with one of their own and three in the top of the third, and we sit in the home half right now.
Ooh, not a double play.
No, Guzman's too fast. Laid down, yeah, a bunt single. So fielder's choice, runners on second. A runner on, yeah, second with one out. But yesterday, my goodness, an absolutely incredible afternoon. We talked a lot about the Troy West Virginia game as that was going on, as we were on the air, and West Virginia made the score look a little bit worse than I feel like it actually was. Yet that being said, when you look at Troy only having four hits in the contest, it doesn't matter really what you do on offense. If you're West Virginia, you're going to find your way to a victory. They won it 12-0, obviously showing why West Virginia, oh no, he ran into an out. Ground ball hit to short in the 5-6 hole, in the cardinal rule, he tried to take third and got pegged. It's a bad mistake right there. In a four-run deficit early. Oh, man. Well, we have seen more runs this afternoon in Omaha than we saw all last night in Omaha, as Georgia survives an absolute pitcher's duel against the Texas Longhorns, two of the most prestigious offenses in the entire country. Could not find any sort of offense, could not even find a barrel to begin the contest. I don't even know if I've seen a game that was as dominant pitching-wise as this one was, maybe ever. And I know a lot of the ESPN guys and the announcers were talking about the little glare from the batter's eye, and I can speak that. I mean, that does make a very, very big difference. But 17 of the first 21 outs of this game were recorded via the K. Through 3 1/3, where 21 outs had been recorded, 17 of them were via a strikeout.
Yeah, that's really impressive. I mean, imagine telling, if you're a Texas Longhorns, you're going, okay, our starter, Luke Harrison's going to go 5 2/3. He's going to get 11 strikeouts, only give up one run, two hits, and you lose the game. That is unacceptable if you are Texas right there. Great pitching night. Justin Bird gets the win for the Dogs. He goes 5 innings, 4 strikeouts, only 2 hits allowed, 1 walk. Did not give up a run. And the story of what, you know, we talked about, oh man, I'm worried, really worried about this Georgia offense in Omaha a couple weeks ago. If they make it there, they're not going to be able to hit in that ballpark. And it doesn't matter because they have been tough as nails pitching, holding opponents to, let's see, I think, yeah, obviously they had the shutout at Texas this week and today. they only gave up 4 runs to Oklahoma and then only gave up 1 run. That's 5 runs in 3 games. That's really impressive for this Georgia staff that was getting barreled by Mississippi State in the Super Regional.
Yeah, it was that and the fact that they've only used 4 arms throughout Omaha so far. And so even having to work their way up through the loser's bracket, you feel as if their arms and their bullpen is in a very, very good spot. And that's not something you see a whole lot of times, again, with a team in the loser's bracket. And fortunate for them, it's been the pitching staff that has dominated. And you talk about just baseball being baseball. The way that these runs were scored were so anti-Georgia, so anti-UGA, because this Georgia team had 2 sacrifice bunts all season long, yet somehow Branch, the shortstop in the 9-hole, was able to get a bunt down that would have 100% Goliathed him, just plunked right in between the eyes if the pitcher was David.
Oh, gotcha, yep, gotcha, gotcha.
Yep, yep. He bunted the ball before the ball bunted him right in between the eyeballs, but was somehow able to get it down, move the runner to second, and then a two-out double, brought home the game's first run. And so you talk about that being the first run of the game to come home, and then chaos in the second, because the question this afternoon and all of last night, and I've already gotten a text from it in the text box, was it a catch? Did you see? I know you said you were able to watch a little bit of this. I know you were going through some tours yesterday evening.
Yes.
But did you see the play in center field?
I did not, unfortunately.
It was Dez Bryant-esque.
Oh, wait, I did see that. Yes, yes, yes. That he catches it, rolls over, and then as he puts his glove to the ground, kind of like, hey, I got it, the ball just pops out.
Yes.
Yes, I did see that.
It's I will be the first person, being a center fielder all of my life and an outfielder all of my life, that is 10 times out of 10 a catch. I understand the idea that when he began to show the umpire that he had the glove, or he had the ball in his glove, it popped up. That is a catch in my book.
I don't know. I mean, if he had, like, run, taken 2 steps, then rolled over, it was kind of he catches it on the dive, rolls over. I feel like there needed to be something in between the catch and then the motion that followed, because I think
I thought the attempt to show the ball was almost the transfer that you sometimes see.
But he didn't complete the transfer at that point, because he's
– But funny enough, he survived the ground. It was after he began to pop up that it was –
Right. I mean, I could see both ways. Granted, again, I was not a baseball center fielder. So, I mean, you speak a lot more from experience. But I think that that is it's one of those plays that you just have to be able to have if you're going to try and win championships, because you can't give a team like Georgia that is so dangerous offensively, both on the base paths as well as hitting the long ball, give them another out.
Yeah.
Give them another base runner. Because at the end of the day, that is only going to come to hurt you and put more pressure on your pitching staff, which already has pressure in a win-or-go-home game.
Yeah. Again, you give a good team, a good offense, 4 outs in an inning. Even if it's not routine to beat a team like Georgia, you're going to have to do some things that are not routine. And
right.
So after review, Georgia challenges it. It turns into a single, and then again, just the definition of baseball. You like the way that I wrote this out? A squibbler tentacles,
right?
I mean, an absolute. You can't even call it a duck fart, because the duck fart at least gets over the head of the first or the third baseman. This was just a cue shot off the end of the bat. I think they said it was hit like 58 miles an hour, but was able to get through the infield and was able to get the dogs first and third, and then miscommunication on a tough fly ball between the shortstop and the left fielder, and A-Rod's actually the one that ends up making the grab, but hesitates just for a moment and had to basically move the hat from his eyes to see that the runner at third was tagging up. Ended up throwing it and made a heck of a throw off of his back foot, but the play at the plate was just late. Georgia dove in to take a 2-0 lead, and that was all she wrote. And then you now look at, again, Georgia going to face Oklahoma, which we'll talk about here in just a few moments, most likely on the other side of our first break this afternoon. But Mr. Schlossnagel continuing to get to Omaha, but not being able to win the whole thing. He becomes the third most winningest coach in Omaha history to not win a championship with 8 14 of them.
Wow, that is pretty impressive. I'm sure that he will take this and, you know, to his whatever next Texas school that he goes to, jumping from TCU to A&M to Texas. I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if Cody Campbell gives him a call and they bet on him in Lubbock. But I think that, I mean, Schlossnagel is a good coach. I don't doubt that. Maybe not a good dude, a good leader, but he can win baseball games. He can recruit. But Texas, a team that was both of our national champion picks. Just not taking advantage of an opportunity when you're holding Georgia to two runs in a winner-take-all game. And like, kind of like what Auburn did earlier this season against the Dogs. Hold Georgia to two runs, but their offense, quiet as a mouse.
Yeah, and weirdly enough, in that game, that was kind of the first game, that Georgia 2-1 game inside Plainsman Park, where Jake Marciano wanted two changeups back because those are the only two runs that the Georgia Bulldogs scored all night. That was kind of the first time you really looked at this Georgia team of seeing the word versatile and versatility, which we will continue to use talking about this team, and the expert will continue to use here in our interview in just a few moments. But that was really the first time this team was looked at. Okay, maybe they can win a different type of game. They can win a pitcher's duel. They can steal a base or two when they need to, or like you saw last night, they can lay down a sacrifice bunt. They can play a little bit of small ball to get the job done. And the Georgia Bulldogs eliminate the Texas Longhorns from the College World Series. And thankfully, their road is a whole lot easier now, right? So, no, it's just another SEC team and one that beat them just a couple of days ago. We will talk about that series. We will talk about the game that's going on tonight as well, what the Final Four essentially looks like, and who we think's going to win it all. And we'll dive into the huge advantage that...
Oh, that's through. That's a run.
Oh, it is.
Wow.
Did you see the play before that set it up?
Yes, the second baseman misses on the double play attempt.
Yeah, the first baseman tried to roll it up and threw it wide of the second baseman, couldn't keep his toes on. North Carolina having fun
team
right now
destiny.
Out in front, 6-1 in the top half of the fourth inning, runners on second and third. Not a great look for a West Virginia team that must win if they want to continue to play baseball. But we will dive into that side of the bracket. We'll dive into what we expect to see tonight and how the winner's bracket usually has, again, a huge advantage, yet how the bullpens are in a really good spot for both North Carolina and the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll continue talking about that. Also, a question from the text box that I want to ask Mr. Trip Upton as well. All of that when we return. We're just underway here on the Wednesday.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute, presented by Bucks Island. March 1836. An old Spanish mission in San Antonio had become a fortress. Inside, fewer than 200 Texan defenders held their ground. Outside, thousands of soldiers under General Santa Anna surrounded them. For 13 days, the small garrison resisted. Among the defenders were James Bowie and Davy Crockett. When the final assault came before dawn, the defenders were overwhelmed, but their stand became a rallying cry. Remember the Alamo. Weeks later, Texas forces secured independence. One more moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
Back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Maybe this needs to be our normal intro just of setting everything up since we weren't sprinting in here this time.
Sure. We're good. We're fine. Deep breaths have been taken.
We've cold plunged to where our heart rate has slowed. West Virginia's heart rate has not slowed down. It's now 8-1 North Carolina. 8 runs on 9 hits for the Tar Heels. They've also taken advantage of two Mountaineer errors, which doesn't necessarily help them. Maybe they'll make their way up to Rocco's soon, and Pat McAfee can go buy him all some Jello shots since he loves that place.
They've already won
so much.
I think listening to Doug Amos yesterday, I think he said they were over 23,000 yesterday.
Jeez.
Second place, Ole Miss, 8,000. So they.
The fact that Ole Miss got 8,000 and they went Owen Barbecue is
Yeah.
Pretty respectable. Pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, granted, now you can buy them online and basically like prepay for this. I'm sure McAfee has basically just been buying the entire restaurant.
He hasn't been too much of a fan. I know he had some comments on the way that him and his guys were treated when he walked in there. And so it was almost like, I don't think you know who you're talking to, Mr. Sir. But
I was a punter.
Yeah. Now he's one of the most influential people in terms of sports. And so it's like, if there's one person you don't really want to piss off, it's Tripp Upton. talking about power Tripp, my goodness.
I understand. I get that.
Well, before we continue diving into the College World Series bracket, and we will again talking about West Virginia, North Carolina on one side, Oklahoma versus UGA on the other. Did have a question in the on-the-line text box, and you can always text those in at 334-784-1685. Again, 334-784-1OTL, as you see it on the keypad, if you still have one of those things. But I think I'm going to confirm this real fast.
They do.
Even on the phone, it still has all of the...
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you can still see the ABC. You don't have to click number 2-3 times to get to the letter C, but...
Right.
Okay, so it is not worth... It is worth us saying OTL.
Yeah, 100%. I think it is. I mean, part of...
I guess I've never checked that.
Yeah. Come on, youngin.
Yeah, damn technology. The devil rotting my brain over here. Got a question from Mr. Billion Beauregard.
Ooh.
And a football question, an NFL question, and so I know that you'll be able to dive into this, kind of putting you on the spot a little bit. But he says, how long do you think Kirk Cousins will play before Fernando Mendoza takes over?
Okay, let's head out to Vegas. This is a good question. I think that...
preseason.
I mean, I think that Mendoza could be the day one starter there, especially with looking at some of these early games. The Dolphins... to open up the season on September 13th. That's going to be a game. I don't think the Dolphins are going to be anything great this year. They're kind of still, who's our quarterback of the future? I think they probably are looking at Dante Moore or Arch Manning to potentially come to South Beach. I think that is going to be a easy, you know, if you were to start Mendoza, you're not having to play some juggernaut. The Chargers are a tough team.
Sorry to cut you off. I do think the reason this was asked, because an hour ago, Kirk Cousins was named the starter.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
This is, I guess, looking at Yahoo Sports. It does say, despite the Raiders' selection of Fernando Mendoza, Mendoza will enter his rookie campaign as the Raiders' backup behind veteran Kirk Cousins.
Okay, gotcha. Good, thank you. We were doing the recordings. I was knocking out some work stuff, but I appreciate that. Honestly, I think that this is Mendoza's going to learn all he can, speed up to the NFL game. I think he is pretty NFL ready. He's an accurate passer. He has some mobility, especially in a good scheme. Looking at maybe some spots you could see late in the season then, they have a stretch of the Titans, Cardinals, and Chiefs. You could start him against the Titans. You have again, they have some tough games, the Seahawks, the 49ers, the Broncos, Chargers twice, Chiefs twice, and Broncos twice, Bills as well, Rams. Gosh, that's a hard schedule. I mean, they play the Jets, so maybe there's some potential there. But I think I would not be surprised if Mendoza does get some snaps. I think Kirk Cousins and Mendoza do a lot of things similarity. I think just one is more mobile than the other. You like that. Atlanta legend. Cole's legend. Or Sears legend, I think, as he likes to say. But I think that Mendoza will see some time this year, whether it be because of injury or because of just the Raiders. Okay, he's ready. Let's go. Instead of needing to win now, I think the Raiders know they need to build a roster first around Mendoza. So they have Ginty and they have Brock Bowers. They can do that. I think that they hoping for more wide receiver depth before they can get Mendoza to be the number one man in Las Vegas.
According to a couple of CBS Sports articles revealing their top 10 backup quarterbacks in the NFL, Fernando Mendoza was listed as number 2 behind Mac Jones, who I would say served as a pretty good backup quarterback for Brock Purdy last year.
100%. Probably should be a 1 somewhere. Even though he went to Alabama, he's pretty really, really good. He was really good in college, has made playoff runs.
Is there any better – we talk a lot about this, and – obviously like a backup punter, but I don't think they keep too many of those. Same thing with kickers, but is there a better job in like sports than the backup quarterback or the third string. I guess backup, there's a little bit of stress because it's like if this guy gets hurt, you're going down or you're going in. So it's like the third string quarterback of, yeah, I'm just here trying to learn the playbook. I'm just here with the yellow jersey on, just trying to give out signals. But yeah, I have no stress.
I think long snappers got to be up there because even though you do have, like, yes, you do have to snap the ball, those dudes can play for legitimately 25 years.
Yeah.
Like, I know the
especially with the rules of, like, you can't touch them when their head is down and
right.
stuff like that.
If, as long as you are consistent, I think of Don Mulback for my Detroit Lions played there for 20-something years. And, I mean, you would have never known him until he was like, oh, I'm retiring, and the Lions are, like, one of our better franchise players in a really bad era. But he, again, like, you could be there for – it's the job security. Because
yeah.
as long as the ball gets to the holder, they will pay you. And you just, all right, you're on the team. We'll sign you to however long contract.
It's a good problem to have. There's at least a little bit of stress in there, but
yeah,
you're at the point of like, okay, just don't make us punt the ball, and then I'll just, you know, snap it to, yeah, the holder, and the extra point will be good or whatever the case may be. But it's one of those things of you are not looked at as a asset by the general public unless you do something wrong.
It's like O-line. You don't think about a good O-line, but when a bad O-line, if you're getting sacked a ton, the first person is going to get blamed is O-line.
Right, yeah. It's like it's one of the people that you don't want to – when I step onto the field, I don't want you to say my name. Because if you say my name, that means that I did something wrong. And so I guess we have a minute now before the music kicks us out of here. Again, Billy, appreciate the question, and we will happily dive into he can speak more of the NFL side of things more than I can. But appreciate the text. And again, the phone lines about to be closed for the next few minutes or so, but a really fun conversation that we will have in hour number two, talking Auburn football, talking football. And so continue to shoot any of you texts that you have our way at 334-784-1685. And we bring in an expert. Instead of Jordan Hill, we go to Olivia Sayer of Dogs 24/7. She is live, boots on the ground in Omaha, Nebraska, to talk about what the Georgia baseball team has been able to do all season long and how it's different in Omaha as they take on the Sooners here again this evening.
On the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Thirty minutes in here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. And usually this time of day, we are making our way up I-85 and heading east to Athens, Georgia, checking on what's going on with Georgia football, Georgia basketball. But today we make our way a little bit farther north, and I guess I should say a lot farther north, all the way to the promised land of college baseball in Omaha, Nebraska. The Georgia Bulldogs, one of the final teams standing in the College World Series after winning the SEC tournament, surviving a wild postseason path, and now finding themselves in the middle of all of the action at Charles Schwab Field. They are once again proving that they're one of the premier programs in the sport. And to help us break all of this Georgia Bulldog team down, from the power-packed lineup to the surprising pitching staff that has come on late all the way through Omaha, we're joined by someone who has covered this team every single step of the way. From Dogs 24/7, Miss Olivia Sayer here with us. Olivia, we greatly appreciate your time. I know you are running around like crazy trying to get as much coverage as you can, but we greatly appreciate you stepping out and taking some time to join us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start with the biggest picture when you're looking at this Georgia Bulldog team. They enter the postseason as one of the favorites nationally, and from your perspective covering this team all season long, what has allowed this team to maintain that level of consistency, regardless of that's non-conference play, SEC play, and all the way to Omaha?
The biggest thing is just the depth of this team. And you know, in the sport of baseball, it's hot and cold. Your best hitter can go cold during a stretch. But what is so good about this team from Georgia's perspective is they have so many guys that can step up in the biggest moment. You look at, obviously, Daniel Jackson and Trey Phelps headlining that lineup. But you also look at guys like a Rylan Luho, a Michael O'Shaughnessy when he was hot,
yeah.
Colby Branch and Ryan Black at the bottom of that order. So they don't go as one player goes. They have just incredible depth on this lineup, and I think you really saw that show itself during the regular season. And then you look at the pitching staff as well, and it's the same kind of thing there. I know a couple of the pitchers have said this, but they really have 6 to 7 starters within that bullpen that can come in, fill long relief roles. So that way, if your starter only goes an out, maybe an inning, you have someone that can come in and fill his place. So this is just a really deep team. And I think that's what helped it do so well during the regular season.
And everyone talks about the power numbers of this team, and rightfully so, when you're looking at the home run numbers leading the country in just about every single power category when looking at this offense. But what do you think is the more underrated aspect, or the most underrated aspect, when you're looking at this Georgia offense?
I would say it's versatility, and it hasn't really showed itself in Omaha, which I'm sure we'll get into later. But when you look at the regular season, yes, this team hit a lot of home runs, broke the program record for home runs. I believe it has the third most, I think it was in the regionals, in the NCAA, or in the history of the sport. But it can also score in a variety of different ways. And I think it really showed itself in Hoover. That ballpark, notoriously bigger. Georgia had struggled there over the last several years. But it really performed well this season. It only hit 2 home runs in those 3 games in the SEC tournament, but still scored 5 runs, 8 runs, and 11 runs. So I think that run just answered any questions about, well, if Georgia can't hit the home run, can it still score runs? It showed that it can in that SEC tournament. And so I think that's sort of, like you asked, the most underrated aspect of this offense is that, yes, it has those power numbers, but it also can score in a variety of different ways.
We're talking with Olivia Sayer of Dogs 247. And Olivia, the Dogs, champions of the SEC, both in their regular season and won it all in Hoover for the SEC tournament. How did the Dogs conference slate that they were able to dominate so well, 23-7 in conference, how did that set them up to make a deep run in this postseason?
Well, you know the saying, in order to be the best, you've got to beat the best. And not saying that the SEC is the best in baseball, but I think the fact that 5 of the 8 teams in the College World Series hailed from the conference has to say something a little bit. So people throw it out there all the time, this phrase, but I think this team is really battle tested. It won all 5 of its SEC road series in some of the hardest environments to play. You look, it went to Texas A&M. It went to Mississippi State and swept that series. It went to Arkansas. It went to Ole Miss, which can get rowdy. So this team has a bunch of experience just playing in those hostile environments, and they almost thrive off of it a little bit. Trey Phelps said at one point during the season, he kind of feels like they play up and down to their competition, and that's why they struggled with some of their midweek matchups, is because they didn't have as much fanfare the opposing teams did entering those games. So I think this team really just thrives in the big moments. It thrives when it faces a little bit of adversity, and I think that helped it get through that conference slate.
Georgia winning the number 3 overall national seed. And Olivia, I know not to waste your time asking about the regional, because there was very little drama that happened in the Athens regional, but the super regional, my goodness, one of the best that college baseball fans have ever seen. Georgia and Mississippi State, it got to the point where, okay, we're not even going to celebrate runs, we're going to celebrate outs when they happened on the mound. What was your perspective in that game, in the overall joy, the elation, but also just the relief when the Dogs were able to sweep the Dogs?
Yeah, we talk about some of the greatest series in the history of the sport. That one certainly has to be up there. I know a lot of people entering that matchup said, this is where the College World Series starts. Yes, it's played in Athens at Foley Field, but Wes Johnson even said it after the series that he told Brian O'Connor, the Mississippi State head coach, that this is crazy and that this matchup should have been taking place in Omaha at the College World Series. So I think you just saw 2 of the hottest teams in the sport. You saw really 2 solid offenses. And then on the pitching side, you kind of just saw a bunch of guys miss their spots. And I don't know if that was maybe nerves. I don't know if it was just execution. But to put it quite frankly, they were kind of throwing a little bit of batting practice out there. And we saw that with all the home runs. I mean, I think it was 21 across the 2 teams in that series. So just 2 really good teams that matched up and 2 really hot offenses.
And then you almost look at the polarizing difference, which goes to show you, you mentioned the word versatility, talking about this Georgia team. You arrive in Omaha with the reputation of Charles Schwab being a little bit more of a hitter-friendly ballpark over the past couple of years. But my goodness, it's been the pitching staff that has told the entire story of this Georgia team throughout the couple of games they played, going even back to last night, blanking the Texas Longhorns. Has that surprised you at all, or is that just the confidence of the pitching staff working its way into full effect in the biggest stage?
It's absolutely surprised me. I mean, when I think about this pitching staff, it has talent, it has the guys with stuff, but they just hadn't completely put it together this season. Now, of course, like any team does, they had stretches where they were solid, they had stretches where they were less solid, but this week you've kind of just seen a culmination of all this talent, all this hard work being put together. And so it surprised me a little bit just with how dominant they've been. But what surprised me even more is the lack of offense that Georgia's had this week. You look at its numbers entering the game, it was hitting over 300 as a team, or not entering the game, entering the College World Series.
Yeah.
Where it was hitting over 300 as a team, it obviously had a bunch of the home runs, solid strikeout to walk ratio. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's the wind, I don't know if it's maybe they're in their heads and they're starting to press a little bit. It just hasn't showed itself this week. And I think the fact that it's had that pitching staff to rely on, Trey Phelps said it best the other night. He said that the pitchers have put the Georgia hitters in their backpacks and have carried them this week. And I think he just summed that up perfectly, because that's definitely what's happened. And it has surprised me a little bit.
We're talking with Dogs 247, Olivia Sayer on the phone line. And Olivia, there are a few clubhouses more united right now than the Georgia Bulldogs, whether it be the profile pictures on Instagram or the Sour Power candy help the Dogs be able to hit these home runs. Talk to me about the locker room culture that Wes Johnson has created in Athens.
Every team's going to say that they love playing with each other and that they're totally united and there's one goal and all this kind of stuff, but Georgia really shows that. And you mentioned some of the stuff with the Sour Power, the profile pictures. They had a Guitar Hero thing in Hoover that they were united over. But I think the biggest thing that really just shows the personality and the culture of this locker room is that they don't care who gets the credit. This team has a lot of transfers that have come in. And obviously when you transfer, you aren't transferring to another school to sit on the bench and watch other people play. You're transferring because A, you either want some more playing time, or B, you want to show, or you want to prove yourself in a league like the SEC. But the way Georgia goes is so analytically and matchup based that not every guy is going to get to play every single game. And it is going to ride the hot hand to where some of these guys that transferred into the program are going to have to sit on the bench for a little bit. But the thing that really stands out to me about this team is those guys that haven't necessarily received the amount of playing time that they might have hoped for, they're still contributing. They're on the top step of the dugout. You mentioned Sour Power, what Scott Newman, Jack Archimonde, what those two guys are doing with that. They're still finding ways to be a part of this team. And so I just really think that speaks to the selflessness of it. And that starts with the culture in the locker room.
The Dogs survived yet again last night, taking down Texas 2-0. But the game before, they dropped to the Oklahoma Sooners 4-3. And so Oklahoma has kind of shown the blueprint of what they need to do to take down the Dogs, as we have Olivia Sayer here with us live from Omaha, Nebraska. What was it that the Sooners did that nobody really has been able to do against this Georgia offense, against the Georgia defense as well? And is there possibly a blueprint that they're going to try and use to slow down this Georgia team?
Georgia couldn't catch up to the fastballs. And yes, that is a lot of credit to Oklahoma and Oklahoma's pitching staff for being able to execute and dot those fastballs. Wes Johnson said after the game, he was hitting the corners, he was hitting the lower zone, the upper part of the zone. So they were just really executing all their pitches. And then on the flip side of it, Georgia was just missing pitches that it typically hits. It couldn't catch up to 94 miles an hour. Even the final pitch that Daniel Jackson flew out or popped up onto right field to end the game with the tying run on second base, Skip Johnson, Oklahoma's head coach, said after the game that he easily could have hit that 9 miles. So I think on one hand, Oklahoma did a really good job of just executing its pitches and really attacking the strike zone. But on the other, Georgia was just really uncharacteristic as well and missed its pitches. So I think there was a little bit of both happening.
We're talking with Olivia Sayer of Dogs 247. Talk to me about the expected matchup on the mound tonight for the Dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, so Oklahoma's going to start another freshman. This will be 3-3 games for them, and it's worked, so why not do it again? Georgia has not announced the starting pitcher yet, as of right now when we're talking at about 1:54 Central Time, but it's likely going to be Matt Scott, Paul Farley, or Zach Brown. Matt Scott was actually Stanford's opening day starter last season before his teammate, both at Stanford and at Georgia, Joey Volchko, took over that role. And then Paul Farley and Zach Brown are both guys that have provided long relief. They've started, they've even closed, they've come into games and covered innings. So that is one thing. If you're Georgia, you obviously do not want to be in the loser's bracket, but you have to feel really good about where your pitching staff is at right now, especially with the bullpen. You look at what Joey Volchko was able to do against Texas in that opening game to throw the complete game. Caden Aoki threw a complete game as well with 8 innings. And then to only use 2 arms yesterday against Texas with Dylan Vigneau and Justin Bird, Georgia has to feel really good about where its arms are at.
Yeah, not too many times that you talk about a team in the loser's bracket arguably being in a better spot than the team in the winner's bracket even having that extra game. And if Georgia does make it all the way to the finals again, would have to win tonight and would have to win the if necessary game tomorrow evening as well. This may be the impossible question to have to answer, but is it the offense returning to form? Is it the pitching staying hot? Or is there something else entirely? Or is it simply just whatever the matchup gives you, like you saw last night, Georgia with only 2 sacrifice bunts on the entire season, yet able to get one of them down. A 2-out double brings home the first run of the afternoon. What is it with this Georgia team that's going to carry them to the finals?
I think it has to start with that pitching staff. You've seen it all this week, like we were talking about earlier, but they've got to get you off to a dominant start. And in order to do that, they've really got to attack the strike zone. Where they get in trouble is when they start to think about how good the opposing hitter is, and so they'll be scared to come in the zone and they'll dance around him. That's where you see a lot of walks that can later turn into 2-run, 3-run homers. So the pitching staff just really needs to attack that strike zone, but I think the Georgia offense is going to have to break through eventually if it wants to get to where it wants to go. The pitching staff can only throw shutouts for so long before a team just breaks through against them. That's the game of baseball. It's going to happen eventually. And I think you've got to rely on that offense, on those bats that have carried you all season long to get to this point if Georgia wants to end where it wants to end up at.
Olivia Sayer of Dogs 24/7 here with us on the phone lines. And Olivia, we greatly, greatly appreciate your time. Before we let you go, plug everything that you have, all of your coverage. Where can everybody go to keep up with everything you're doing, whether that's in Athens, whether that's covering this Georgia team, or just talking about the SEC baseball as a whole?
Yeah, so all my coverage will be on Dogs 24/7. That's under 247sports.com. And then you can find me on Twitter at Olivia K. Sayer.
Awesome. Well, safe travels while you're in Omaha. I know you're hoping to be there for a couple of more days, but we greatly appreciate you for taking the time to join us, getting a closer look at one of the last SEC teams remaining on college baseball's biggest stage. Olivia, greatly appreciate your time. Thank you once again.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure chatting with y'all.
That's Olivia Sayer of Dogs 24/7. Again, usually Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7, but one of the baseball perspective here this afternoon. And so Olivia Sayer took the time to join us live with boots on the ground from Omaha, Nebraska. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up hour number one right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Also appreciate Olivia Sayer for taking the time to join us here this afternoon. Boots on the ground in Omaha, Nebraska, to give us her perspective of what she has seen from the Bulldog team all season long, and especially in the postseason, and how, my goodness, how funny is it that you look at the way that baseball is played and how one side of the team can get hot one weekend and it's the other side of the team that gets hot the other. Georgia and Mississippi State could not get outs on the mound, and it was just an absolute home run derby in Foley Field. And now it's the pitching staff that's come to life in Omaha, and it's the offense that they need to step up big time here tonight. West Virginia, is also at the point of just trying to get outs, because they trail now North Carolina 10-1 in the top half of the sixth inning. Another RBI single. It's one of those things of, man, when it's going good, it's going good. I think every single ball that North Carolina hits happens to be placed perfectly, even that one right there into the shift, but still gets it past the diving glove of the second baseman. Again, North Carolina in the winner's bracket, and so they're just one win away from making it to the College World Series, and they are, at least as of last night, heavy favorites to win the whole thing, just because of what Georgia and Oklahoma have to do just to try and get there. And I think you obviously add in the level of opponent to that as well. And so unfortunate for the SEC, just and basically – it's the SEC West of the past. You're just cannibalizing yourself and making it to where, yeah, only one team's going to make it. And unfortunately, it is either going to be Oklahoma or Georgia, which, funny enough, neither of those teams were in the SEC West. But just for looking from that as the whole. And while we have just a moment or two, Tripp, you found some really cool information, again, sticking on the baseball side of things, with Auburn baseball picking up a big-time reliever out of the transfer portal.
Yes, Mr. Corey Kling has committed to the Auburn Tigers, formerly of Arizona and USF, so out of Delray Beach, Florida, West Boca Raton High School. Corey is going to be going into his third year of senior year of eligibility. Last season.
No, we don't know what eligibility is. Yeah, he's going into his freshman season.
Something like that. He'll get an injunction. 43 strikeouts, 9 walks, and 40 innings pitched. Again, just a true reliever, and ever since the word, when he was over in USF as a freshman, was very, very good. Posted a 1.93 ERA with a .96 whip and 8 strikeouts and 8 appearances, all in relief. So this is going to be a guy that you're going to see out of the bullpen as a support guy for any of the starters, the Andres Alvarez's, Jake Marciano's, Jackson Sanders, Alex Petrovic, and more. I'm really excited to see what this transfer and brings in Power 5 experience over from the from Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, went 2-1 last year in his 19 appearances. Did have a 4.5 ERA in his 37.1 innings of work. Gave up 42 hits, and although that feels like a lot, did not allow the extra base hits a lot. Again, 42 hits, only 12 of them being for extra bases, 12 doubles, 1 triple, and only 1 home run as well in 37 innings. And so that is what you will definitely boast coming out of the bullpen of. You eliminate the long ball, hopefully, which is a very, very good sign. Only walked 8 batters, had 43 strikeouts, and only 1 hits Batman as well. And so you look at this Auburn team and what you've seen from Coach Everett Tiefert and Coach Butch Thompson of the strike percentages, the strike rates, and how that carried this team through, again, the regular season into the postseason, and obviously didn't get where they wanted to be. But I would not say that by any means it was the pitching staff being pointed at in terms of any sort of fault on that side of things. And so excited to see the Auburn baseball transfer portal continue to work its way, continue to boast its roster for the upcoming season. But we'll take a break. Hour number one in the books. When we come back, a football. Hour number two, we talk win total projections combined with the schedule. Doing a little bit of math here on the show. What could go wrong? And then we'll also talk about an early season test inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. All of that coming up here in hour number two.
Production. You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
We talk SEC schedule strength based on the projected win totals. That's in an early test inside Jordan-Hare Stadium.
now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. The rain seems to hopefully be out of here, at least for the time being. Don't know what the rest of the week or what everything else is going to look like. It says on my unnamed weather radar that we're in a flood watch, and so, it's a cool-looking flood outside of our window.
I said the same thing earlier to a client that was coming in to a record, and it immediately started pouring, but... Yeah, I mean,
they're expected to continue until 7 a.m. Well, at least it's not on our side of things. Hopefully everybody's doing okay if you're dealing with crazy flooding right now. But I don't really see it outside our window. But what do we know? We're not the weatherman and don't act like we are. In hour number one, man, we had a really fun time diving into a full baseball conversation. We talked about the game last night with Texas falling to Georgia 2-0. In how this Georgia team has found a new sort of identity making their way to Omaha, Nebraska, and it's been on the pitching mound. You've seen so many stories about the offense, and rightfully so, but all of the home run numbers and everything. But so far, it has been the pitching staff that has dominated for the Dogs in Athens. So we talked a little bit about the game last night. We had a nice discussion on whether or not it was a catch in center field. I say yes. Tripp said he doesn't really think so. And so nice conversation on that side of things. Dove into a little bit of what the bracket looks like now, again, both with West Virginia and Georgia needing to win here this afternoon to force the if necessary game. West Virginia will have to pull off a miracle in Omaha if they want to continue. They do have the bases loaded in the home half of the sixth inning. That being said, they trail 10-1 to the Tar Heels here in the early slates. Oklahoma and Georgia, first pitch set for right around 6 o'clock Eastern, or Central Time, rather, 7 o'clock Eastern Time on ESPN. And again, Georgia must win that one to continue their season. Talked a little bit about that before we got Olivia Sayer of Dogs 24/7 here with us on the phone lines. She has boots on the ground in Omaha, Nebraska. And so instead of Jordan Hill, we talked with Miss Olivia Sayer to get the baseball perspective and had a really fun time diving into the identity of this team, how that has shifted, how that has changed, and what needs to be what works, whether that's tonight, whether that's moving forward, if the Dogs want to claim a national championship or make it to the finals. That was all in hour number one. If you missed any of it, you can always check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in the second hour of the show, we talk all Auburn football. We'll break down an early season game in Jordan-Hare Stadium that the experts disagree with us on who will come on top between the Gators and the Tigers. We'll talk all about that in our thoughts, breaking down by position whether these experts are truly the experts. But first, we're going to dive into a discussion about the SEC win total projections, looking at the schedule and seeing how these two compare. And we'll be talking all about that in this second hour. But if you want to be on the line, phone lines are open the entire second hour, 334-321-1390. If you want to give your thoughts on anything Auburn football, if you missed a little bit of hour number one and want to talk a little baseball, some basketball, whatever you want to talk about, 334-321-1390. The text box has been firing today at 334-784-1685. We've got some NFL questions, some college questions as well there. And again, so make sure to hit us up, 334-784-1OTL. And Christian, let's take a look at this schedule because of the strength of the, I guess, predicting strength of schedule and what Vegas thinks.
Yeah, so this is something that I thought about, funny enough, last night sitting on the couch. And we're looking at just the win totals. I saw the article pop back up of the BetGM projected win totals and how everybody gives their over-unders for just about every single Brendan Sorsby site that there is. And so wanted to dive into, again, not only talking about the win totals, or I guess I should say not necessarily diving into the overall win totals for the teams that, again, I guess are in the SEC, but instead the schedule as a whole and their projected win totals. And so, again, a little bit of math went into this, and I got a text during the break and said, oh no, not math. Yes, this is the new revamped edition of On the Line, where we do have math problems and we are able to do them without any sort of issues.
I was in honors math in high school, so we might be
all
good.
Of a year and a half ago, Tripp was in honors math in high school, okay?
4 years ago.
Still, 4 years ago, man. I say this as if I'm that much older than you.
You are probably, yeah, you're like 3 years older than me.
That's a lot, dude.
That's a lot.
I'm old.
You are old.
I am old. But no, so again, diving into a little bit of the formula that went into this and how it goes is this. We're diving into the 9-game SEC schedule. And taking Auburn, obviously, from this perspective, and won't dive in as much. West Virginia just lined into an L4 double play.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Hey, when it rains, it pours. And even with the lineup combined 0-9 coming up from North Carolina, I just don't think West Virginia.
Oh, that was the chance.
They're getting out-hit by 8. They're getting outscored by 9. The country roads might be leading back to West Virginia right after this.
They are. They are, in fact, taking them home.
Yes.
Man,
to
that
the place
was...
where they belong.
Yeah. West Virginia. Yep. It is, in fact, where they're going. But no. So looking at the 9-game SEC schedule, and we will take Auburn in this perspective just as the example. Auburn, of course, this didn't print in order, but Auburn obviously playing Vanderbilt, Florida, Ole Miss, LSU, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, again, obviously not printing in order, but looking at the BetMGM win totals, Vanderbilt's line is 5.5 wins. Alabama's line is 8.5 wins. Georgia's line is 9.5 wins. Arkansas's 4.5. And so when you're looking at the Auburn schedule as a whole, what does the overall win projections look like in terms of those teams? And when you are diving into the Auburn side of things, those 9 teams are projected 63.5 wins. Again, not going over, not going under, but what that line is currently set at is 63.5. And so we have been able to rank every team in the SEC based off of the overall strength of schedule, based off of the teams that they play and their projected win totals. It almost feels like you're doing an RPI formula in college baseball of that's not only the teams that you beat, but who did they beat and who did they beat.
Right.
But no, so sticking this on the football side of things. And funny enough, there are quite a handful of teams, 4 of them to be exact, that have 63.5 of their scheduled projected wins. You have 3 at number 3 at 10th with 62.5, and then you have a couple in there at 61.5 as well. But figured we would start with the team who has the highest opponent win total, and that was probably going to play a little bit of a factor regardless into obviously the other teams' win totals and their projections. Poor Arkansas.
Yeah.
Poor Razorbacks, as if they haven't had it bad enough already. The Arkansas SEC schedule has their opponents winning 68.5 games.
Yeah, I mean, looking at that based on some quick division, that's going to be 7.6 wins per opponent. What that basically breaks down to is
every SEC game they play is a pretty good bowl game.
Yeah. Like, that is just so frustrating, and especially in year one under Ryan Silverfield. I know how crazy those fans get up in Fayetteville, but it might be time to temper some expectations if you're Arkansas and say, hey, it's year one. Let's just wait and see if we steal a game or two here, great. But if we don't have the season and we're dead last in the SEC, that might not be a bad thing. That might be we're building for next year. Type of situation.
And if it wants to make you feel any better, Arkansas, at least your non-conference games are easy. You have North Alabama. You also have Tulsa. And then you also have Utah at 9:15 in Rice-Eccles Stadium, who's projected to be a pretty dang good team this year. And so, again, looking at the 9-game schedule, the Arkansas Razorbacks sit at the very top of the SEC with their opponent win total being 68.5. They take on Georgia. They take on Texas A&M, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Auburn, South Carolina, Texas, and then end it with LSU. Now we bookend it with the easiest schedule. And again, this is, again, talking about all 16 SEC teams. Arkansas at the very top with their win total, their opponent win totals adding up to 68.5. If you just take what the betting odds say that those numbers are set to be, then you compound it with the lowest team in the SEC, Vanderbilt, who has 8 less wins just projected on their football schedule this year, which is really wild to think about it. Basically, that's an extra loss per game, just about. I know that,
right.
Dwight, I know that's not direct. You play 9 games and it's only 8. I understand that side of math. But the fact that your schedule, just off the bat, and we know that these records aren't going to be concrete, but the fact that right now you're already sitting at 8 projected less wins for your 9 SEC games is wild for me to think about.
Right. Let's call a spade here as well. They also, Georgia is also at 60.5. Let's talk about Georgia's schedule. You know, you play Oklahoma, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Ole Miss, Missouri, Georgia in the conference. And surely they play, you know, we talked about Arkansas's, you know, cakewalk out of conference. Surely they play a tough one with powerhouses like Tennessee State.
Yeah.
Western Kentucky.
Woo!
And a Georgia Tech team bringing in a new quarterback and new offensive coordinator in a game that they haven't lost in a decade. Really tough stuff from the Dogs right there, if I have to say that. Vanderbilt, on the meanwhile, they have to play Auburn and Georgia in the SEC, as well as Ole Miss, Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida. Their non-conference, Austin Peay, Delaware, and the NC State Wolfpack. I will give you credit for that, but just that is going to be interesting to see with those two teams. I already think Georgia's good enough where they're not going to need an easy schedule. They're still going to shoot for 11-1, if not undefeated.
Sure.
Vanderbilt, though, bringing in a new quarterback, bringing in a true freshman quarterback at that, I think it's going to be really, really cool. I mean, interesting to see how Vanderbilt can do. That's why I think that game is so important, is that if, you know, whoever wins between Auburn and Vanderbilt will have that early momentum and can take advantage of their schedules.
You can. It's just wild for me to look at the fact that there are 8 wins between SEC teams and their opponents' win total. Arkansas at 68.5 projected wins for their SEC opponents, Vanderbilt and Georgia sitting at 60.5. And so the fact of, okay, well, you wonder why when you look at these, the betting odds for the 2026 win totals, Georgia sits at 9.5, Texas also sits at 9.5. Yeah, it makes a little bit more sense, even because you're just looking at this Georgia team, yes, and the talent that they have with Kirby Smart and Glenn Schumann and Gunnar Stockton. That in itself speaks volumes, but the fact that, man, you don't need to help those teams out. And then you look at Arkansas, and again, a lot of this is based off of the teams that you're scheduled to play, and obviously whenever you play Georgia, it adds 9 wins to your total, rather than when you take a team like Kentucky or Mississippi State or Arkansas, and they give you only 4.5 wins. That plays, yes, a big factor, but a very widespread margin when you're looking between the 16 teams.
Breaking news. Remember that a couple weeks ago we talked about the Georgia and Florida State series that was going to be played in one of 8 cities. They did just announce that will be played in Nashville in 2028.
That is kind of cool.
So a little bit of breaking news. Again, while we're talking about schedules, seems very fitting after I talk about Georgia's, you know, riveting non-conference schedule. But no, you're right. I think that having the schedule with, you know, if you have a Georgia on your schedule, you're going to, or an Alabama or a Texas, it's going to be harder. If you have an easier schedule like a Arkansas or even a Mississippi State or Vanderbilt, that's going to be lower. I know that I read that the number of, if Arkansas divided by 9, that's 7.6. The other way around, that means Georgia and Vanderbilt would be 6.7 total, like, aggregate wins on each team. So that's a bowl team. That's a Birmingham Bowl, Gasparilla Bowl team, potentially, that you're playing every single game instead of a higher, like a Texas Bowl or a Gator Bowl or something like that. That's going to make a difference in this upcoming season for teams across the SEC and specifically the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, when you just look at it, you mentioned 6.5 wins versus just call it 7.5 wins. That's a 7.5 win team that's probably upset that they found a game or two that they couldn't win. Probably not college football playoff caliber teams, but ones that easily could have gotten to that mark. I mean, I guess if you look at that right now, that's like you're playing Ole Miss, LSU, and Florida, according to the SEC win totals, versus a South Carolina, versus a Missouri, versus an Auburn, just in terms of the 7.5 versus 6.5. And so, interesting to see on this side of things. And again, we told you that Auburn's sat at 63.5. We'll take a break. We'll come back and dive into some of the teams that they're matched up with and maybe some of the biggest talking points that we haven't gotten into yet when looking at these win totals and how you look at Auburn's schedule and, oh, look, it's so easy. It's so much easier than years past. I don't disagree. But the numbers still tell you it's a pretty difficult schedule. We'll talk about that before we dive into one of the most important games of the season, a team that you haven't played in quite some time, and the one game inside Jordan-Hare Stadium that you get under the lights. We're just underway here in hour number two. If you want to be a part of the conversation, feel free to call in 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open. We're back right after this.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here in hour number two of the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. He's Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. North Carolina is 8 outs away from punching their ticket to the College World Series final, where they will take on either Oklahoma or Georgia. That game coming up tonight, where Georgia has to beat the Sooners twice, essentially, to make their way to the finals. But North Carolina very much in the driver's seat out in front, 12-1 over West Virginia. And we continue our conversation breaking down the 2026 SEC schedule strength, and not necessarily just your SOS, your strength of schedule in which you look at it, but using this based off of the win total projections, looking at what BetMGM has in terms of the entire SEC, with Georgia and Texas at the top with 9.5, Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M with 8.5, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Florida at 7.5, Missouri, Auburn, South Carolina at 6.5, Vanderbilt, the lone team, at 5.5, and Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Arkansas at 4.5. And using those numbers and combining that with your schedule as a whole, and so with that, with the 9 SEC games that each team will play, Auburn's projected opponent win total is 63.5 wins. You look at across the entire SEC, Arkansas is the number one overall team, or I guess the worst off team, with their opponent win total being 68.5 wins, and you have to go all the way down 8 games to find Georgia and Vanderbilt at 60.5. And so favorable schedules more so with some people rather than others. And we want to dive into the fact that, again, Auburn sits at 6th in the SEC in terms of their opponent win total, the strength of schedule using these win total odds. But before we do, I know you said you found a statistic that,
yes,
I don't know if you said, is it going to make me happy or is it going to really fire me up in the negative way?
It'll add context to this season and
okay.
what this number effectively means for Auburn's schedule, if it's hard or easy. Do you want to know what Auburn's schedule last season, the combined wins was?
Oh, so this exact same thing, but for last season?
The teams that they played last season, yes. So, like, how many wins each team got.
Right.
They in the 8 conference games, because remember, it's 8, not 9, in the 2025 season, that would be 69 wins. So that would be the hardest schedule out of all of these.
And only playing 8. One less game.
Playing one less game.
Holy cow.
That averaged out to 8.6 wins per team.
So even if you just add that again, that would be 77, essentially, or maybe a little bit more than that, 77 wins in your 9 conference games, if you kept that that trend going.
Yes, and granted that a lot of those numbers are because of bowl games and conference and conference championship games and playoff games. All that to context is why that number is a little higher. But still, looking at this year's schedule with last year's win totals and what they got to, 72. So 72 wins, the teams that Auburn played last year combined for 72 wins last year. That's every team with 8 wins.
Wow.
That you're looking at 10 wins, 11 wins, 12 wins, 13 wins, and then you have your 8, your 7, your 4, and your 2 across some of those worst.
So the fact that you still have 4 and 2, yet you have so many that have hit more than double digits to where that it more than weighs it out.
Yeah, I mean, last season, Auburn played 5 double-digit win teams in Vanderbilt, Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma all reached double-digit win mark. Missouri was an 8-5 team, and Arkansas and Kentucky weighed that number down. And so that just goes to show that this Auburn schedule is a little easier than years past.
It's funny. Yeah, you say the word easier, and all of the Auburn fans roll their eyes because it's – easier just in terms of what you've seen over the past, but just by looking at these numbers that we were able to crunch and come up with, Auburn still sits at 6th in the SEC in terms of what their opponent win total looks like this year. By no means is the number what it was, you mentioned last year, but Auburn, their opponent win total using these BetMGM SEC win totals comes out to 63.5. Sitting right in the middle with Auburn, Florida, Missouri, and Texas A&M. All of those teams are projected for their opponents to win right around 63-64 games.
Right.
And so how funny is it that, I mean, you're looking at basically, I mean, Arkansas at 4.5 and State at 4.5, weighing those games down. And we did a deep dive and a big discussion last week about the importance to win those games. I mean, we felt like those were the ones that were a little bit lower down on our mental importance, not because they were not important to win, but just because of the – it's almost like the hidden desire of, you know, so much that you need to win it that it doesn't feel as important as some of the other ones did. We mentioned Baylor and obviously Alabama and then Florida kind of towards the top of our list of getting the season started where it needs to be. But funny enough, again, we're looking at a relatively easy schedule, easier than years past, yet you're still sitting at the very worst top middle in terms of the SEC.
Right, and I think you also the point is why some of these teams are near the bottom is because that they can't play themselves. Like they
right,
can't
sure.
Like Alabama benefits from not having to play Alabama in the SEC, while Arkansas does have to play Alabama in the SEC. That's why that win total is lower. Same thing for Georgia. I do think that does play a factor, but Auburn's still a hard ish schedule comparatively. Again, not we looked over the numbers last year, that's not necessarily the case, but it brings up a really interesting question of, should we be judging teams by record alone? Like, obviously you hear this so much, and the strength of schedule argument in college basketball, college baseball, and there is a lot of it in college football as well. There always have been. You look at Nick Saban campaigning a couple years ago with the college football playoff. Is a 9-3 Arkansas team viewed differently than a 10-2 Georgia team? Especially in the out-of-conference, that plays a factor.
You heard it here first. Arkansas is going 10-2, according to Trip Upton.
I'm reading the statistic, the example you gave me.
I did. No, it's a very, very true point of, yeah, not all win totals look the same. Not all records look the same. And we usually boast the SEC of, okay, does 8-4 or 9-3 in the SEC look better than 10-2 or 11-1 in the G5 rankings? Is it time to have that conversation in the SEC alone, just based off of what these projected win totals across all of your opponents tells us? And my answer is clearly yes. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and another team that has a similar trajectory to the Auburn Tigers, but many people are giving them a little bit more favor.
halfway through hour number two. You're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Thirty more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. I'm Christian Griffin. He is Tripp Upton. Having a fun time in the studio here this afternoon. A lot of baseball coverage in hour number one, talking about the College World Series, talking about Omaha, and a really fun interview with somebody standing boots on the ground in Omaha, Nebraska, covering the team that plays tonight, Olivia Sayer of Dogs 24/7. Again, if you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com. Here in hour number two, just got done talking about the SEC win total projections and almost the strength of schedule in terms of what your opponent's win projections look like, and how Auburn was sixth in terms of the 16 teams. Arkansas got the worst draw with their opponent win totals throughout the nine games, being 68.5 wins. Georgia and Vanderbilt by far the easiest, at 60.5 wins, and brought up the good point, obviously, that we wanted to continue talking about, and I guess preface before continuing diving into this, of Georgia obviously cannot play themselves, and so that benefits their win totals just by a little bit. But even if it's not playing, even if Georgia's not playing Georgia, and you even put them at 61.5, I mean, it doesn't play that big of a factor. But looking at it right now, Auburn is tied for sixth with their opponent win total 63.5. And another team that they are tied with is a team that Auburn is going to be taking on very early on in the season. In fact, first SEC game, and do it so under the lights inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, the 20-year anniversary of the Trey Smith flip into the end zone following the blocked punts, when the Florida Gators come to town. And CBS Sports released an article calling it Ready to Get Hurt Again, halfway jokingly, but I don't think all the way joking, because it's called Five College Football Teams That Tom Fornelli Cannot Quit Going To in 2026. And you continue looking through this article and you see teams like Kansas State. He's very high on Avery Johnson, again, Mr. Flo, and many people forget that he is coming back yet again. And so Kansas State making their way again with Colin Klein, or the son, Mr. Colin Klein. I think there is some excitement with Kansas State. He mentions Michigan State, which I think draws a little bit of the Kirk Cignetti eyebrow towards the camera. USC, I feel like that's always one right there. You continue, everybody does, every single year, to buy into what Lincoln Riley does. And I do think Jaden Maiava is going to be absolutely incredible. I talked about him all season long, between him and Mekhi Lemon, who he won't have this year. But safe to say that that USC offense is going to be just fine. It's going to be what the defense looks like. And they saw improvements last year, but what is that going to look like going into this season? And then Virginia Tech is one of them, with James Franklin and Penn State, all of the transfers working their way into the ACC. Is there going to be a lot of talent on that side of things? But a team that he mentions, and in fact it's actually the first team that he mentions, is the Florida Gators. And Tom Fornelli says, current win totals have the Gators pegged at 7.5 right now, but when I look at this team, I do not see just a squad that can get to 8-4. I see a team that could reach the college football playoff. He talks about the talent on this team and John Sumrall not being necessarily the first choice for this Gator coaching staff, but being a very, very good one. He mentions there's no single factor that guarantees success for a coach when they change jobs, but more so if you're looking at Florida or Florida A&M in conference play, you're facing teams on a level playing field, so coaching can be the difference maker. And it was really that last line that kind of fired me up when I was able to read it, talking about it's the coaching that can make the true difference. And so many of these teams and so many quote-unquote experts use Florida and Auburn kind of in that same trajectory for this year. We talked about the power rankings, and they have Florida much higher than Auburn. Mm-hmm. And I think that's more of just, okay, well, even if we are high on Auburn, we're not going to get burned again. They're not even worth putting on that top five just based off of what the last five or so years have looked like. But we figured that we would break just about everything down between these two teams, all the way to the schedule this season before this team, or before the two coaches took over their previous regimens, as well as Florida and Auburn. And then maybe dive into a little bit of the position by position. And I think that's going to bring a whole lot of excitement just to kind of talk about, are enough people talking about Auburn and the way that they make this seem, as even if Auburn's the favorite in this, they're expecting Florida to win it inside Jordan-Hare Stadium at night.
Yeah, that's a very bold claim from Mr. Finelli, saying that this Florida team can be a team that could be a playoff contender, especially with their schedule, that if you're saying, oh, they're going to lose some games, is the Auburn game one of them? What does that mean for Auburn? But let's take a look at kind of, he said coaching is the major thing for these two. Let's take a deep dive into these two coaches, Christian.
Let's do it. So I'll pull up the South Florida side of things if you want to pull up Mr. Sumwalls
Tulane. I already have Tulane pulled up. And
well,
you know,
there we go. So the best way to look at this is looking at what these coaches took over, I feel like, is a good way of going about it, and then what they were able to do in their years at the previous schools before diving into, again, obviously what Florida and Auburn have done and relatively similar paths on that side of things. But what did Mr. Summerall do when he was at Tulane, and what happened with Tulane before he was able to take over the program?
So the Tulane Green Wave, John Summerall, did really, really well. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. 7-1 in conference both years. Made it to the AAC championship game both seasons in 2024. That was they lost to Army, and their one conference loss was to the UTSA Roadrunners. Oh, it was to the Memphis Tigers during the regular season. You know, we gotta tell it like it is. Did beat South Florida that year. And then he went 9-5, and then 11-3, winning the American Conference Championship over a good North Texas team, and going to the College Football Playoff, where they lost in the first round to a Ole Miss team that ended up in the national championship. And that's really impressive, until you look at the spot above them, and arguably, it was better. Willie Fritz, let's look at the 2 years before he took over, because he was up and down throughout his tenure until the end. The Fritzer, 12-2. 7-1 in conference, won the AAC, and won the Cotton Bowl against Lincoln Riley and USC in 2023. Do you remember that? I think that was Michael Pratt at quarterback for the Green Wave in the 2022 season.
Defense was optional that year, or that game.
Yes, it was. 2023 wins the conference again in the regular season, drops the AAC championship game to an SMU team that was gearing up for a P5 jump. They were undefeated in the regular season, lost in the Military Bowl to Virginia Tech, I believe, in a torrential downpour. Rained that game, I believe, so it was very hard. It was Willie Fritz had already left for Houston. So looking at it, in the 2 years of Summerall, 14-2 in conference regular season. The 2 years before, 15-1. Some might say that's a fall off if they like math.
That was 23-5 over the 2 years before John Summerall took over. And again, this is not a slight by any means on John Summerall being a good coach, because we understood where Summerall was Auburn. I mean, he was the favorite to land the job for quite some time. But again, just more diving into, a lot of the people are really, really liking this Florida team. And wanting to just draw it back to the Auburn perspective and how this can be a very early season test and take it multiple ways. If people are really, really high on Florida, maybe Auburn's getting them at the perfect time before they get hot. The first true road test that they have to make is Auburn getting them at the right time. And again, Willie Fritz going 23-5, 15-1 in conference play before John Summerall took over, where he went 9-5, 7-1 in conference play, and then 11-3, 7-1 in conference play. But let's just take a little moment back, take a little step back to South Florida and to talk about Alex Golish, but more so Mr. Jeff Scott, who was there for 3 years following the Charlie Strong era.
I remember Charlie Strong era. Because I remember the Jackets went down to Tampa and lost in, I believe, 2017.
17 was when South Florida went 10-2 and 6-2 in conference play.
And then the next year they came back to Atlanta and Georgia Tech beat them in 2018 behind a great rushing attack. It was Paul Johnson's final year with the program, and that was a really big win. I remember being in the stands right behind the visitor sidelines. I remember making jokes at Charlie Strong's expense.
So Charlie Strong went 10-2, 7-6, and then 4-8. He then got the can in 2019, and a man by the name of Jeff Scott took over this South Florida team.
Former Clemson offensive coordinator.
Where he went 1-8 in year one in the COVID season, 0-7 in conference play. In 2021, his first full season, went 2-10. He then went 1-7 in conference play. And then in 2022, he followed that up of, man, you're at ground bottom, or you're at rock bottom. You can't go any lower than that. You stand corrected. In 2022, he went 1-11. 0-8 in conference play. And so the 3 years before Alex Golish got there, combined, or even just for the simple math formula, the 2 years where Fritz went 23-5 with Tulane, Jeff Scott went 3-21 with South Florida. And so just from that standpoint, we're going to give a little bit more credit to Alex Golish and the weight that he had to bear just to get this team up to relevancy, where he went 7-6, 7-6, and 9-4 back in 2025. And so you talk about the coaching side of things, and this is all, again, sparking from Florida being one of the teams that Tom Fornelli says could make their way into the college football playoff, and how coaching can ultimately be the biggest deciding factor on that side of things. I think the early arrow goes to Mr. Alex Golish.
Right, and honestly, I don't even think that the most impressive John Summerall tenure was at Tulane. Look at Troy. A team that he went to back-to-back conference championship games, won those, only two losses total in conference in the Sun Belt with Troy. So I give him a lot more credit for that than him at Tulane. I think a lot of that was Willie Fritz's players. I know in the portal era, you can't really say, well, this is X-era teams. I don't think there's going to be a lot of players that you can even say are freeze-level players, much less Harsin era. I don't even think there are any on the roster right now, but I look at Auburn and I really think that, or this, like these two coaches, I think they're both really good. I think they both took over similar programs in major cities with, and football heavy states, with Tulane being in New Orleans, but that's an LSU state. Meanwhile, Florida is, USF is in Florida, which they might be the fifth best team in the state, looking at Miami, Florida and Florida State, and even UCF, their rival, who is in a Power 5 conference. Mm-hmm. Or I guess P4 conference, but that is such an important distinction of where the top talent is going and where the rank of the schools. That, again, makes it even more impressive for Alex Golish.
We got a question in the on-the-line text box, and this is for you to be fully indicted into the on-the-line. Would you mind looking up the Delaware quarterback and reading out his name on air, please?
Oh, gosh.
It's per request.
Mr. Nick Minenucci?
Ah. Close.
What? Are you messing with me?
I am not.
Nick Minenucci?
No. Well,
This was what ESPN is saying. Is there a new one in 2026 that I'm
missing? No, that's the right name, but I still think you're not saying it correctly.
I don't know.
Spell it for me. Let me make sure you're seeing the spelling correctly. I'm not trying to pull something on you.
I feel like you're going to like dunk. Okay. N-I-C-K. Mm-hmm. Nick. I got that one. I got that part right.
Yeah.
M-I-N-I.
Uh-huh.
C-U.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
CCI?
Yeah. You were saying two N's in the last name.
Oh. I don't know, man.
Oh, okay. Well, it was a really good inside joke that we had with many of our listeners. Nick Minicucci.
That's why it's funny.
But that was actually Minicucci. His name. But we didn't know that prior to, I don't even remember what we were talking about with making some sort of joke in terms of not believing in Delaware. But
hey, don't count out the Blue Hens now, home of Joe Flacco.
And home of Nick Minicucci.
Yeah.
That was all.
Okay.
Text in the on-the-line text box.
Thank you.
We're going to answer our on-the-line breakers whenever they text.
Absolutely. 334-784-1685.
Again, talking about the coaching staffs and what they were able to do at their old programs before taking over John Summerall at Florida, Alex Golish at Auburn. This may need to be a conversation for either tomorrow's show or when we continue to dive into our deep dive and our breakdown of each of these teams. Because not only do we feel like the coaching staff gets a little bit of an arrow towards the Auburn Tigers, we feel like a couple of the positions do as well. And so that'll probably be a little bit more of a conversation for another day, but yes, Mr. Nick Minicucci set to have a fantastic year.
Yeah,
for Delaware.
Yes, I know that their quarterback, now that I know his name, is Nick Minicucci.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of the better Group of Five quarterbacks available right now, and Delaware out of the CUSA. I have to look at their schedule. I haven't really done my G5 deep dive.
What is their win total off the top of your head?
I'll look it up. Delaware football win total. Oh, I'm gonna
guess 5.5.
Yeah, I'm gonna guess 5.5. Oh, 6.5.
Wow. Look at that.
Wow.
Never doubt out the Minicucci's. Ever. We're gonna take a break.
We'll come back.
We'll wrap up the Wednesday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Trip is over here on the Delaware Blue Hen NIL jersey sponsorship page, trying to get a Nick Minicucci football jersey.
They have the they have a lot of stuff for baseball and lacrosse that you can buy. They don't have as much for football, maybe just because it's so new in, like, I guess newer. Maybe they're coming out with new jerseys or something. I really don't know, but that would be awesome.
Put that right next to the Milwaukee hats that are on the way from head coach Sean Wagner. And so we're just gonna get like a whole memorabilia wall here on here in the studio that has everything. And during the break, we also came up with the fantastic idea that may need to be a part of our just summer conversations, because it's a perfect free-for-all Friday hour, and this will be something we need Jack in the studio for as well. And just have a full draft of an all-time sports names, and you could have it for baseball, you could have it for football, you could have it for basketball. I mean, you can have just about everything, and whether or not that is the actual name or just the storyline. We had a text over the break of the – I pride myself as a man of faith, as Castellanos drives one into left. It'll be a home run.
Yes.
Need that call for Nick Minicucci running into the end zone. It'll trim the lead to 42-7 as Chris Paul hits a three. But an all-time – sports name list draft would be
they have highlights.
Fantastic for us to have one day. So we may need to work that out. And Smoke Monday just got called for targeting yet again, just by this conversation being brought to the airwaves. But no.
Smoke Monday might be on the list.
He might have to be. Tank is on that as well.
Yes.
But
Would we only limit it to Auburn athletes, or would we be able to go anywhere?
See, that's the thing. You can go Auburn athletes, you could go college football.
I mean, if we're going to go across the state, Kool-Aid McKinstry.
Sure.
Fantastic.
You could go Ha Ha Clinton Dix as well. I mean,
that's a good one.
You could have one based off of the best names, but then also the best names and then the talent as well.
Yes.
That's a really good one. Again, we could go college football. We could go NFL. We could go just about everything that we wanted to. We'd have to play it safe on a couple of names that by no means are we're going to put the limit, the big X on the big Amish, the first baseman for the Oakland, or for the Athletics. We are not going to take any risks on
the
on
FCC.
That.
The FCC would not be happy with us.
No, we're going to have to say his first name, take a break, and then his last name. And so that would not be said. But a full-time draft all-time name would be fantastic to have on the show. But speaking of show, a fantastic one that we had here this afternoon, a whole hour of baseball conversation in hour number one. Olivia Sayer of Dogs 24/7 on the phone lines joined us from Omaha, Nebraska to give us her inside scoop of everything going on in terms of Georgia baseball. The Dogs taking on the Sooners tonight, 6 p.m. Central. West Virginia trying to make it a game, 12-6.
Oh, wow.
They trail North Carolina. And we'll be back to talk a lot about that and continue our conversations on all things Auburn football. Again, a lot of that was in hour number two, and we appreciate everybody for being here with us. For Tripp Upton, I'm Christian Griffin, and today, just about every other day, puts it in the perspective that sports are so much better with an opinion. Appreciate all the text messages we got throughout today. And again, they're better with opinions. If you love them, if you hate them, we're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope that you'll be there to join us.